dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake
McClure.
And it is sort of exciting, actually.
Exciting to whom?
To me, because I recognize that there is the distinct possibility at any given moment that I could say something, because this is live. Presuming today is Saturday, November 14th, and I could just say something at any point during the entire program to totally destroy our business and careers. And,
oh yeah, that would be fun.
And just, you know, it's also possible that we could not be able to have anything at all interesting to say and just completely blow it out of the water.
Far, far more likely. I mean, that is the most likely event, actually, that we will never have anything interesting to say. In fact, if you...
It's questionable.
Yeah. At some point in my life, Saturday morning was filled with watching animated figures hit each other over the head. And to think that I prefer sitting and talking to you about things that only we find interesting is... Strange change in my brain structure.
It's geeky.
Yes.
Well, I'm supposed to do a disclosure at this point, so I will. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only a preeminent, post-ultimate...
Is it preeminent because it's not imminent yet? Is that what
it's
preeminent
post,
means?
Yes, it's post...
It's not. Maybe it's post-imminent, preeminent, but never imminent.
Post-ultimate or something like that. Radio program on this Saturday, November 14th. But it is... Also, the name of an investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which does not in any way apply approval of the SEC.
No.
But it just tells you who the regulator is with which we are regulated in Salado. And because I use the term we, you've probably already figured this out, that the principals at the Personal Wealth Coach there and the two guys who are inanely chattering here are the same people. So there is a distinct affiliation and probably conflict of interest somewhere in there.
Now, you said inanely, and I'm going to say that we are going to make an effort to do the opposite of being inane.
We're
going to
be ane?
We're going to be anely speaking to you, or at least we're going to try to anely speak to you.
Well, some people would refer to it as anally speaking to us.
Yes, we're analistic...
We are analysts.
Analysts.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's spelled, that's true.
Other people pronounce it analyst.
We're very analytical. And that's probably one of our great feelings. By the way, anyone who's interested in finding something interesting to do today.
Interested in finding something interesting.
Yes. That works together very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's repetitious, too. The gathering of the clans is this weekend in Salado, where there will be.
Salado, Texas.
Significant quantities of people running around down there with men wearing skirts and
kilts, and they will kilt you for it if you call them skirts.
It looks amazingly like a skirt to me, but that's all right. I even own one and occasionally wear it, but it's men who are not who may or may not be wearing pants, but if they are wearing pants, you can't see them.
Right.
Right. There it is. So any of you who would like to see relatively large numbers of men running around in what looks amazingly like a pleated skirt and squeezing sheep bellies and making them squall loudly while somebody else is beating on a drum, and young ladies who are wearing similarly, wait a minute, what they wear when they do the dances, those are
skirts.
But they look like kilts. They're identical.
No, they're not.
They're not.
No, because they're being worn by females.
So females can't wear kilts?
No, those are skirts.
Even if they're identical. Anyway, they will be dancing around and jumping up in the air and doing whatever the females like to do. And,
I'm being very scientific here.
Flinging the Highland. And
you know, Pluto is considered a dwarf planet.
Right.
And part of that is the definition of its shape. As well as
its
the size.
Well, the shape is round.
The size is less important than the ability to have satellites within a certain range.
Well, they've got lots of satellites, Pluto does.
Right, but the size of the satellite is the important thing. It needs to be purely circular and so on. So there's a new definition that's been proposed that says that that the size definition should be more about what satellites could be grabbed, what gravitational pull is around it. And at the scientific debate on this new definition, it was asked, well, according to the math, that means the moon is a planet. And the man that had been proposing this said, yes, but we haven't come out with the definition for satellites yet. So the moon might both be a satellite and a planet,
yes,
which is all silliness because I don't think the moon or Pluto care at all what we call them.
I think we should, if it's going to be a dwarf planet, and the American Astronomical Union has officially designated, or International Astronomical Union, right, the IAU.
I think we should call it Grumpy if it's going to be
that's
a dwarf.
It. You know, well, I don't know, Grumpy or Happy or Sneezy or, I mean, they found volcanoes on it now. Ice volcanoes.
Often read many studies. Many studies and some longer studies and
micro studies.
And one of the things that I have found to be true is that 11 out of 12 dwarves are not happy.
You have this down pat, right?
How many dwarves did Snow White? Was it 12 or
there were,
seven?
There were 12. There were seven dwarves.
Six out of seven dwarves are
six
not
six out
happy.
Of seven, but you apparently there's some other dwarves running around. Well, if you throw in the Lord of the Rings, there's a large quantity of dwarves.
They're not happy.
And none of them seem to be particularly
happy. Only one out of seven dwarves is considered happy. I
said, I really think we need to rename, if it's going to be a dwarf planet, that we should go through this renaming process and take the dwarves from the Lord of the Rings and the dwarves from Disney.
All the better dwarves in our history.
Right. And I don't know, it doesn't look particularly grumpy. It has a big heart on it.
Yeah, I would say it's lovely. Well,
I
think
don't
we named it Quark
I don't
after
think
that.
I don't think there's a dwarf who's lovely, but it might be. Goofy is probably.
Pluto and Goofy, they go to, it's
yeah,
Disney.
That,
it's Disney.
There it is, right.
There we go.
Okay. Anyway,
we're using Disney words, so.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we actually do know some things about investing and finance and
the economy
things
like
and
that.
Things of that sort. And if you'd like to call in to ask us a question or make a comment or something, you're certainly welcome to locally in East Bell County. It's 773-1400. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400.
Well, I guess the news for the week is that the stock market went fishing. Yes, in Barron's under the Trader, which is where I normally get my weekly stock market data because they do the calculations.
Mm-hmm.
It says stocks reel on Fed and retail fears.
Well, reeling could just be spinning.
Well, they are, but they're reeling in the Fed and retail fears.
So I think stock spinning fishing are both appropriate.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average for the week was down 3.71%. The S&P 500 was down 1.74%.
At the same time,
yes.
You know, many people say that gold is the alternative to stocks. Gold hit a 5-year low.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice?
This week.
Yes. And that, I don't know. This downturn in the market. By the way, let me throw some other numbers in here.
Let's finish with numbers.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average over the past 12 months, the past 52 weeks, is down 2.21%. The S&P 500 is down 0.92%. So we are in a time period right now when a year ago, to the best of my knowledge, few people were suggesting the market was overpriced. Earnings have not done particularly well. As a matter of fact, they've actually fallen over the last year. But the stock market, generally speaking, is lower now than it was a year ago. And that's just one of those things you go through. One of the reasons that you're either going to be successful or not successful if you happen to be an investor is people who are not particularly good investors do a poor job of tolerating 1 year of negative returns.
Yep.
They do even less well at 2 years and 3 years. But those things do happen, and for whatever it's worth,
they happen often.
This market this year is retracing 2011 so magnificently that it's almost frightening. Now, it's considerably higher than it was in 2011, the market is. So that if you'd invested in 2011 and you fast forward to 2015...
You're looking pretty happy.
But the way the market is tracing out for the year, if you overlay it over the 2011 graph, they're almost identical. Now, if that is more than coincidence, which it may or may not be, what you're going to see is a 5-7% decline in this downturn that we're this most recent, this little downturn we're going through here.
Right.
A 5-7% decline, followed by a rise at the end of the year, followed by a really great 2016. And all I've got to say is, in reading why the stock market was down this week,
mm-hmm.
it was pretty fascinating listening to the reasons. It's because consumer spending was down and the Fed may raise interest rates. I mean, that seems to be the consistent picture. And I'm going, okay, this is a really big surprise. But consumer spending really wasn't down.
No.
Even though the Commerce Department reported a 0.1%, I think it's 0.01% rise in consumer spending for the actual month of September. By the way, that's an initial estimate, and it doesn't mean that it will continue to be the same as they go back and look at it. And economists were expecting a 0.3% rise. And this is one of the fascinating things. For at least the last 4 years, 4.5 years, the stock market has been taking a dip every time rumor has it that the Fed may raise interest rates to 0.25%. Excuse me, 0.25% is really, 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 really a low interest rate, and each time it has come back very nicely, and the only reason the Fed would raise interest rates to 0.25 is because the economy is doing really, really well. And the stock market does better when the economy does really, really well. And so what we have is one of those times when, in the short term, the market is profoundly irrational, profoundly illogical, and profoundly inefficient. Whereas over the long term, it tends to be profoundly efficient, rational, and logical. So this is just one of those things that we come into.
There is a sound of a fan motor going in here. It's fascinating. Yes, it is. Sounds like they're cutting logs with a fan in the room. Anyway, there's a headline that I enjoyed very much. It says, stocks see a new wall of worry. And for some reason, I don't think that the reporter understands where that term comes from. Because the reporter was saying that the wall of worry was this thing that was stopping stocks moving forward. The wall of worry comes from a quote by Sir John Templeton, who said, bull markets climb a wall of worry. And when the headline is about the wall of worry, that makes me really happy. So, and this is a CNBC, which doesn't say much about the effort that was put into the research of it, but it's when I see headlines like that, I get happy. Long-term,
what?
our equipment in here seems to be having a great deal of fun. There's network errors on the commercial playing device. So we may not play commercials. We may not have news. This is going to be interesting.
This is, I feel like I'm in Apollo 13 here with systems starting to fail, except that
Temple, we have a problem.
I think actually we have electronic equipment in here that is older than Apollo 13.
It could be. There's an abacus at the back of that machine that we have a screen hooked up to. The abacus is being pushed by a mouse on a little running wheel that is calculating when we play commercials.
Well, something.
Lost file server.
I suspect.
You're getting warnings jumping up on screens everywhere. We're trying to continue the conversation, but this is very distracting.
Well, the 1950s technology that is in here continues to work relatively
well. Just turn the 8-track over. We'll move on to the next.
Okay. Had an interesting conversation during the week with a fellow who was who previously wrote software. He did software integration for the International Space Station, and he's my age, which means he's not young. He's retired, has been retired for some time, and I said, "How long ago was that?" He laughed and he said, "The software for the ISS and the equipment on the ISS are 1960s technology." And he said, and 1950s and 60s computer programs.
Oh, well, that's nice to know.
He said it just took that long to get the thing up and in orbit. And he said it's actually been in orbit a long time.
It has been in orbit.
And he said it's basically at this point held together by baling wire and chewing gum. Which
duct tape.
Which basically says something to me, because it occurred to me then, I remember when the International Space Station was a thing that was going to be in the future, and I remember when it was being assembled and built and so on, and it occurred to me that there are adults running around today whose entire life there's always been an ISS, there's
right.
always been an Izzy up there.
Well-educated adults, even.
There's always been a space station, you know? And by the way, if the Fed raises interest rates in December,
it won't have any effect on the Izzy.
This is something I read. The last time the Fed raised interest rates, the iPhone didn't exist.
Ooh.
And there are people that I know who, if I say the iPhone didn't exist, they get a blank look on their face. The iPhone didn't exist?
What is? What did you do?
How could? Because his iPhone has obviously existed for their entire lives.
There is a good article put out by the Wall Street Journal that is kind of in line. We're talking about the Fed quite a bit so far this morning. It's quite in line with inflation. What is going on here? Why are we seeing the slow wage growth? We're seeing the unemployment rate drop. It's down around the 5% mark. So we're getting close to full employment again. And yet we are not seeing wage growth. And if you think about supply and demand, if you're getting down to full employment, it means that there's competition for each employee now. If you want to hire someone, you've got to fight other employers to get that person. They may have to leave a job where they're already employed, or it could be that they're in interview processes with multiple people. If they're a good employee, they're going to be in competition. And yet we're not seeing wage growth. If you think about that normal competition, what has been in the past is you say, well, we're going to raise your wages. And what they have found at the Wall Street Journal is that rather than increasing wages, many, many companies are instead increasing benefits.
Right.
Giving a more comprehensive insurance plan, or paying for cell phones, or giving company cars. Or, you know, the list keeps going on. And for every dollar spent there, it's cheaper for the company because they don't have to pay payroll taxes on that. It's one of the reasons why inflation may be as low as it is because the benefits are increasing, but they're increasing in a way that you can't spend in the economy in the normal sense. You don't get a choice as to where it goes. It's either going to an insurance company or to a cell phone company or so on.
Let me correct. It was the retail sales rose 0.1% last month.
Yes.
Not 0.01%.
Yeah, no, 0.1%.
Yeah, 0.1. And producer price, this is another thing that occurred last month that has got some people worried, and it is one of those things that I have been ridiculed about. We were warning.
That's ridiculous. We've
been warning for many years that deflation is the threat here, and producer prices decreased 0.4% last month.
Right.
Now, that's not annualized.
And this is
0.4%. If you think if you multiply that out over a 12-month period, that means that producer prices dropped on an annualized basis 5%.
This isn't the CPI, which people talk about. This is the producer index, which is a completely different index. And to anyone that's not an economist, your eyes are crossing at this point and the drool is forming on your lip. Producer price index is
price increases. Who make stuff, yeah.
For the people that are manufacturing things, that are creating the things that you buy. Consumer price index is what you get at the store when you're buying it. And if a producer price index drops, then what you're going to see is the CPI will drop correspondingly in a little bit of time.
And we basically are in deflation. And at a 5%, and admittedly this is a one-month figure, but it dropped the previous month too. So based on what we're seeing at the producer level, in other words, and by the way, producers cover a wide range of everything out there, the actual cost of creating goods and services in the United States is estimated to have fallen on an annualized basis last month at a 5%, again, annualized basis. Now, a negative 5% per year price on things is full-blown deflation.
That's not the new coined term disinflation anymore. You're talking about full-on deflation.
Yeah.
This is why the Fed did not raise interest rates. It's not consumer spending or any of that. If they raise interest rates, it's going to be a very small amount, and they don't want to do it at a point when prices are falling.
And I think there's a consensus, at least among the economists right now, that they would like to see the Fed end the uncertainty by doing what's called a one and done.
Right. And see, this is one of those funny things about when the Fed is talking about raising rates. It causes people to wait to see what's going on, and they stop buying, which causes the demand for buying things to go down, which causes the people that sell the things that are being bought to lower their prices. So by waiting to raise interest, they're not going to raise the interest, because by waiting to raise their interest, the prices fell.
Yeah, and that, another aspect of what's about to happen, one way or the other, there's about the economists who estimate these things and the bond market together. If we take all of the data and the really smart people who compile data do this kind of thing, they say there's like a 93% chance at this point, according to all this data, that the Fed will raise interest rates. And since virtually all of the members of the Federal Reserve Board are now singing on the same chorus of...
There is one dissenter. One dissenter. He's been the same dissenter for the last three meetings. No, we must raise now.
And no, I'm talking about they're all saying we're going to raise the interest rates.
Right. Well, this one has been saying raise now. Everybody else has been saying raise later.
Yeah, well, they're all pretty much agreement at this point.
The raising is going to happen.
Now, this is the interesting, this is one of the more fascinating things that's going to happen here. Yeah, we have a technician.
The technician has, we'll call him an engineer.
The 911 person has come in the door. Now, he says there's somebody else who's an engineer, though. I've also already validated with him, he does not have a train.
No train. He's not wearing the engineer hat.
So he would be a technician by definition. Okay. Oh. Now it works again. That was good. Hey, but the point I was going to make is, let's just say that the Fed does what they're probably going to do, which is raise, by the way, the current official the Fed guideline is 0 to 0.25%. It's not zero. It's 0 to 0.25%.
Yeah, there's a range.
And now what they're talking about doing is raising it to 0.25%. They're changing out the two and dropping in a point, okay?
Right.
Which really doesn't amount to a rise in interest rates, except symbolically.
Right. It's still within the range that was already existing.
And corporate bonds in the United States have already started rising in interest rates,
which causes their prices to drop.
Right. And so this sort of thing is already going on. But here's the interesting thing.
There's an interesting thing about this? Part of this would be interesting?
The euro is trading at about 1.07 cents to the euro.
Mm-hmm.
And if
1.0692.
Close. Yes. I said about.
I don't have any point 0.0692 pennies lying around.
But if you have a large enough amount of money, it will work out.
I want 6.92 pennies to round this out.
Yeah, but actually, if you were at $100,000, that would be
a little hacksaw on my penny a little bit.
This is the point. If they do actually raise interest rates in December to 0.25%, the assumption right now in Europe is that the dollar and the euro will reach parity.
Right.
Which has been many, many, many years. I can't remember that far back.
It won't just reach parity. It's going to reverse because yesterday, I really love this guy's name, Mario Draghi. He's the head of the European Central Bank.
And he's in Draghi.
Yeah, I'm going to be really sad at the end of his term, the end of the one-year term.
They ought to keep him on.
He's just got a great name.
Yeah, it sounds like it ought to be in a video game.
Right. Well, he's given the strongest hint yet, according to the Financial Times, that they are going to boost the scope of their quantitative easing program.
I love the way you just said that.
So
we're going to boost the scope of our quantitative easing program.
So if
interest rates are not low enough yet, they're only negative all across Europe.
Right. So what that means is somehow they're going to pump more money into the economy in Europe.
Right.
So it's likely that what they will doing with they'll be doing, they call it quantitative easing, is they will be buying bonds from people on the market.
Right.
So they're going to be pumping money into the European economy, which weakens
the euro and lowers interest rates
at the same time that our interest rates are likely to go up and strengthening the dollar, which is going to cause something. We complained for a little bit a few years back that the interest rates in Europe were much higher than they are than they were in the United States.
Because they were fighting inflation.
And we saw some small amount of dollars heading to Europe for that. But most dollars came to the United States anyway, even though you could get a better deposit rate in Europe. Well, now it's going to be the other way around in that the European interest rates are dropping. They're finally looking around and saying, well, what we're doing isn't working very well, and sure worked pretty well over in the United States. So as we raise our interest rates, the euros are going to come flooding over into the United States and convert to dollars, which is further going to cause the price of the euro to drop
and
against the dollar.
For those of you who don't remember all that went on years ago, and
I
understand that.
I don't remember what went on today.
When we hit down in towards the bottom of the what's now called the Great Recession in 2009, the Fed was lowering interest rates and later started pumping money into the economy. And you may remember that who's the guy that was on Fox that got kicked off Fox? Glenn Beck.
Yes, he was.
Was warning us that runaway inflation was going to seize the country and the dollar was going to become worthless and the euro was going to take off.
This is at the same time that the gold companies were paying him huge amounts of money and giving him shares in their companies so that he could advertise the gold and say that he's completely impartial.
So this is a situation where I'm going to say that we were right. I'm going to say that Chairman Bernanke was right. The conventional economists were right. The administration was right.
It wasn't different this time. And it was the same as what has happened throughout history.
The threat was not inflation, it's deflation. And I don't know if you remember watching, and even a couple of years ago, there were people screaming that we're going to have runaway inflation, you should buy gold. And then it dropped 50%. And there's been less of that, but there's still people talking about that you should buy.
Oh, yeah, right. They're saying, well, this is a temporary downturn, and it will go up to its traditional levels, except that if you go, there's a great place. I talk about them often. There's a website. It's called macrotrends.net. Go there, and you can look at the traditional price of gold, and you can click a little button that will adjust it for inflation. It does it for you, and you will find that the highest point gold has ever gotten was in 1979, and it was still
in recent history.
If you apply inflation, that is the highest it ever went. That in 2009 and 10, when it was so high here, it was still about $200 inflation adjusted, less than it was in the late 1970s.
No, I'm referring going back 1,000 years.
Oh, well, 1,000 years. That it's really hard to get the same basket of goods to determine what things are worth from then to now. And if you're saying is, how many cars could you buy with an ounce of gold in ancient Rome?
Well, that's not. There is actually a way to equate some of these things.
Yes, but it gets very loose.
And actually, before the Spanish discovery
of gold in the Americas, New World.
Yeah, before they started hauling shiploads of gold back and making themselves fabulously wealthy, and the price of gold started to plummet.
Uh-huh.
When they were strictly dependent upon finding gold in Europe, where they pretty much found all the gold.
Right.
The price of gold was quite significantly high then, like maybe on a factor of 100 times higher than it is today.
Yeah, because you could have a whole lifetime's wages represented in a relatively small gold coin.
Now, what is the name of that website you talked about again?
Macrotrends.net.
Oh, .net, because there is a .com that has something totally different. Okay. Anyway, the point is that not only has gold been falling, but we are in a situation where deflation remains a serious threat. And I don't know, even a few years ago, that I would have even imagined it was possible to have negative interest rates. They are common across Europe where they tried, and this is a crucial thing, and a lot of people are not going to like this, but they tried in across Europe, driven by the Germans who have this paranoia about inflation, they tried austerity, pay off your debts, national and otherwise, pay down your debt in the middle of a recession, which is, by the way, there was an element, political element in the United States who insisted we should not be spending more money, we should be all paying down our debts, and reducing deficits and reducing the national debt and all of that. And they have managed to put themselves back in a recession while we are growing. Now, the Japanese, by the way, have tried exactly the same thing. It has worked exactly the same way.
They tried the European
deflation,
technique, yeah.
Austerity, deflation, recession. Anyway,
I can give a good reason for that. Both Germany and Japan, before World War II, in the Great Depression, had runaway inflation. They did not have deflation. If you remember the Reichmark, and before that the mark, the runaway inflation that happened there, the same happened in Japan. It was part of what led them to be to conquest, to start taking over their neighbors, is that their currency was running away and losing all of its value, where we had deflation. So even though our memories are not very long, they seem to be slightly longer than those of our two biggest, two of the three biggest allies, Germany and Japan, and that they look back and they say runaway inflation is the danger always, because they hadn't experienced deflation. And now they're experiencing deflation and going, ooh, this is icky. Let's stop. And by the way, that is a good economic term. Icky.
Icky?
Icky. Yes.
It's similar to sticky.
Yes, it's icky. Okay. We don't like deflation. It sticks to the money, and it gets worse over time. So we need to avoid it here. Even if we raise interest rates a little bit, that could have a detrimental effect. You know, when we're talking about a strong dollar, what's scary about that is strong dollars tend to lead to stronger dollars, which inside of our economy is more deflation. We don't want deflation.
Well, and we're going to have to fight, and we may ultimately, I can even imagine a situation where the Fed leaves rates at 0.25 and goes into quantitative easing at the same time.
Right. I can imagine that. Now, I'm going to throw in a little piece of good news. Both you and I have been watching this trend over a period of years. There's something called household formations. Right now,
that's stalactites that kind of come down off the ceiling of houses?
No, well, that would be a formation in a house, but that's one that you should probably get rid of. Household formation is when new people go out and buy or live alone for the first time. And in the United States, we're seeing a trend of people between the ages of 18 and 35, about half of them are living with their parents. But the trend that we're watching is that while they're living with the parents, they're putting away a lot of money to buy their own place in the future. And what we're seeing in that trend is it seems to be coming together in a short distance into the future, where people will have enough money to put a down payment on a house.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, money is going to come into the economy at a very healthy pace.
Yeah.
And that will lead us out of deflation. And in that right now, banks are just really, really, really reluctant to give loans. They have really low interest rates. But you basically have to show that you have enough money already that you wouldn't actually need the loan, but you're going to get one anyway before they give you a loan. And what we're seeing in this trend is when people have enough money to put a really good down payment and keep some money in their pocket that the bank is comfortable enough loaning them money, then as the loans start going out, interest rates are going to rise for that too, because as that big wave of home purchases hits, it's going to cause a lot of banks to start competing in a different way, in that they're going to raise interest rates instead of lower it because they don't want to lose their money.
Speaking of spending money and interest rates and
commercial
activity,
yes.
We have commercial activity that's supposed to go on here. So we're going to take a break for commercials. You're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and you're certainly welcome to give us a call after the commercials at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we're not exactly getting flooded with telephone calls, folks. Hey, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Which means we've either bored people to completely to tears where they all left, or
I did.
We're so interesting that nobody cares.
I was in tears and left, and this voice is just a fig tree in your amalgamation.
There's another parallel here, and I've discussed this before, and the parallel is that we are paralleling the beginning of the 20th century. And during the same period in the 20th century, we had deflation.
Mm-hmm.
And
in 1907, we had a horrible, horrible recession that we called a depression. It was saved. We were saved by the bankers.
Well, we had a banking panic, right?
That was part of the cause of that deflation, is that the banks stopped loaning money because they lost a lot of money. And when you stop loaning money and you lose money as a bank, it causes deflation.
And what happened yesterday in Paris, I guess it was technically the day before yesterday now.
Right, right.
Is the kind of thing that was going on across Europe at the same time. There were I don't know that they necessarily could. They called them anarchists.
They didn't call them terrorists.
But there were people who were doing things, and you had countries trying to split off from other countries, which is what's happening in Catalonia
and Syria and Iraq. Somalia, and
we're certainly paralleling history. And if that's
Sudan,
true,
Georgia,
strictly from the perspective strictly of an investor, we'll have some bumps along the way, but we have about 14 or 15 years of one of the greater bull markets in history in front of us. Now, that's hard to believe and hard to see right now. And if we're online, if we're correct here in our assumptions, we're in a relatively pleasant position of saying that we should see some positive effects in the economy and in the market next year. This is not so much scientific as it is sort of a summation of all the things I've read and seen and experienced. And certainly my prediction of it's kind of like Yogi Berra said, it's really hard to make particular predictions, particularly when they're about the future.
Right.
I really think,
because the future is just not what it used to be.
You got that. I really think that we are going through a temporary period of pessimism. And I think a big piece of that could have been witnessed in the debates that just went on, where you have political candidates who are taking turns bashing the United States with the hope that if they bash the United States hard enough and the government hard enough, that we will turn the controls over to them, bashing the establishment. Whereas the reality is the United States is the healthiest economy on the planet. And we are...
major economy on the planet.
Major economy. When I say economy, I mean major economy, because the smaller countries are actually just pieces of larger economies.
Right, right.
South America, whether they like it or not, are one big, loosely allied economy.
Yeah, so Europe as a whole is one economy,
right.
and big chunks of Asia are in
economies. It's really hard to find even a small country with a better economy than the United States has right now. I can't think of any off the top of my head. There may be, but the point I want to make is that one of the conundrums that's come up right now is Gallup just did a poll and asked the question, do you think the country is going in the right direction? Are you optimistic about the future of the United States? 25% of the people answered yes. But when the conference board goes around and asks a bunch of specific questions, and they did it at approximately the same time, they were asking questions like, how well off are you financially now? How well off do you expect to be in a year? How hard are jobs to find? How good are the quality of jobs? Their rating went from 93 to 96. Now, 96 from the conference board is one heck of a high rating. In other words, when asked about the specifics of the economy as they sense it locally and as it directly affects their families, Americans are consistently saying things are a lot better than they were a few years ago, and they see them getting better over the next year. But when asked in general, how are things going, 75% are saying they're going in the wrong direction and they're going downhill. That is something I have found personally to be true as I speak to people. I say, what do you think about the government and the economy and how are things going? And they say they're terrible. But then I ask them about their own personal financial situation. It's better than it was a year ago or 2 years ago.
That's what's important.
It has the potential to keep getting better. They see it getting better. They believe it's getting better, but they believe the whole nation is falling apart.
Right.
The only reason they would have that kind of thought process is they've been listening to political candidates beat up the United States of America.
Right, and I've mentioned this in the past. I'll mention it again in the future. Anytime you have a presidential election where there is no incumbent, nobody is defending the status quo. It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican. If there's an incumbent, their job is to talk about the good things that have happened so that they get reelected. Anytime you have a presidential election where there is no incumbent, you see a massive bunch of lack of confidence in the economy. Because whose job is it to say things are good? Well, you're not going to get elected by saying things are fine. You get elected by saying, look at all the problems that I'm going to fix. And hopefully our listeners are smart enough to keep that in mind as they hear the debates. But I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how well you hold that in your system. If you watch a debate, and it doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat debate, you're going to end it with a sense of depression. Man, there's so many things that are wrong with this nation. And particularly if you're a Republican watching the Democrat debate or a Democrat watching the Republican debate,
they actually do that?
The pundits do. They want to be snarky, okay. But they definitely end it with a depressed feeling. And even if you're a Republican and you've watched the debates, I don't know any Republican that's watched the debate and at the end of any of these presidential Republican debates has gone, all right, we got this. I hear a lot of, oh, man, he messed up. Oh, that guy did great. Who was the winner? I think that guy was the winner, and I don't feel so good about any of them.
The least bad loser.
Right.
Well, let me tell you what's really going on out there. What we have is a 56 on the Purchasers Managers Index for services in the United States. Now, right. What's that? The Purchase Managers. Now, that's when a company and a service would be like hotel rooms and food and all the things that we consume directly that aren't technically manufactured. And when we look at that index, a 56 means really actually it's 59.6.
Yeah, 59.6.
It went from 56 to 59.6. Now, what that says is that over the next year, the people who have to buy services, who have to hire people, by the way, for hotels and motels and restaurants and all of the places where plumbers and all the places where services are provided, the people who do the hiring, because that's the principal thing that the Purchase Managers Index do there, and who buy the computers and the desks and whatever is needed for the new employees, are saying we have really strong growth that we're seeing our managers are planning for over the next year in the economy. When we look at the manufacturing index, yes, it's about 51 point something, 51.7, 52. Well, that doesn't sound too good until you realize anything above 50 is still growth. And it's growing. And, by the way, I was just reading some very good information on the Purchasers Managers Index. It's misleading, to say the least. It shows our manufacturing is lower than it actually is, because what we do is we do have a lot of American companies like Apple have a lot of their components built overseas. They bring them back in the United States and they sell them in the United States.
Right. You know, this, I realize we're being nerdy here, but that's what you're listening to us for. Hopefully.
Right.
Hopefully. Otherwise, you're being even more disappointed than the presidential debates.
Could be people were insomniacs last night and they're trying to be put to sleep.
The overall index, this is the ISM Manufacturing Index. Is sitting at a 50.1. Anything above 50 is a growth, and 0.1 over 50 is a tiny growth. But there's some interesting numbers if you dig down. The prices are at 39, which means that there's a massive drop in prices. That's not 50. That's way below 50. The exports are at 47.5, and imports are at 47. That's retraction. However, new orders and production are at 52.9. That means that they are expanding at a really nice rate. If you look at that as a percentage, you're talking about a 6% expansion rate on new orders and new production. So what we're seeing in that very slow thing is the inventories are dropping. Inventories are at 46.5. So people have been not replenishing their inventories, which is why you see the new orders and production jumping so fast, is because those inventories were slow and low, and that's been slowing everything down. Everybody's been afraid that people won't order, and people have been ordering, so it makes it look like there's a slowdown.
I think we're going to get a much, much, much better Christmas than people are anticipating.
We're out of time.
We're going to have to finish this next hour. And there's also very, very, very large, long-term macroeconomic things going on we'll talk about next hour. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail on the weekends, live people answering the phone during the week. You're welcome to give us a call locally at 947-1111 or
1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our website, tpwc.com, as in thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You can leave us emails there. You can listen to podcasts. You can see our ugly mugs and our beautiful staff. And until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.